talk about what these studies mean in actual practice. Do the results so far mean that physicians should be recommending these medications to prevent prostate cancer?
I think it's premature to do that until we know it reduces prostate cancer mortality.
I don't think we'll ever find a prostate cancer mortality endpoint. I just think it's statistically unfeasible and would take such a large number of patients in a long follow-up, we'll never get there. To me, some of these intermediate endpoints of cancer detection, of finding aggressive cancers when they're smaller, would be enough evidence for me to go ahead and recommend 5-alpha reductase inhibitors.
I think it's important to note that none of the 5-alpha reductase inhibitors has been FDA approved for prevention of prostate cancer. I do personally think that the finasteride data is significant enough that men who want to be screened ought to think about it. I'm not willing to go the next step to say that they ought to take it.
And I'll just say, I worry that if we can't design a trial big enough to show that it reduces mortality, maybe we already know that the benefit is pretty small.
But there could be, as I say, I mean, let's think big picture. There's an overall health benefit for prostate health, and there may well be a health economic benefit averting all of these unnecessary treatments.
I would argue that the benefits, which I think are very real for men with symptomatic prostate enlargement with big prostates do benefit, but that's not everybody. Yeah. And this is talking about putting it in the water.
You know, one of the clarifications I think I should have made is that I don't think the population studied in PCPT is necessarily the best population to receive an agent like a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor. We probably should target a higher risk group of men for risk reduction, and that I think would maybe turn around and allay some of the concerns that you have.
Our third patient story addresses the question we've just been exploring, how the studies of medication for prostate cancer prevention might be translated into practice. Doug is 51 and lives in Dallas, Texas. He's had elevated PSAs and is being treated for an enlarged prostate.
I was born in Texas, and I've lived here all my life. I'm 51 years old. I have a wife and two children, and we really enjoy being outdoors. I've been camping since I was in Scouts as a boy. And now with my son in Scouts, we go camping regularly. Once you get all set up, you can just sit around and relax.
I remember when Doug turned 40, I felt like it was really time for him to go and get a complete thorough exam and make sure that everything was okay.
I'll ask you to have a seat up on the table, please.
I had my first routine physical. My doctor told me, wow, you have a larger than normal prostate. I did a PSA test then, and it came back higher than normal levels. You should watch it. When I found out I had a large prostate, I just took that as okay. It's bigger, you know, somebody's got to have normal, somebody's got to have big, somebody's got to have small, and I just have a big one. But then a couple of years ago, I started having to get up in the middle of the night to go to the restroom. And then I'm like, I can't go camping anymore. Crawl around inside your tent, put your boots on. It's just too much of a hassle. I had another PSA test. And, it was a little higher, so they recommended that I go see Dr. Fulgham.
Doug first came to me in 2002. Over a period of time, Doug had some worsening of his obstructive voiding symptoms and, more importantly, had a rising PSA blood test.
How you been?
Good.
Good to see you.
See
you. How things been?
Oh, been pretty good.
The biopsy was negative for cancer, but his prostate had already enlarged far beyond what it should be for his age. And so we continued to treat him with a combination of alpha blockers and modification of his diet. In the last 6 to 12 months, he developed significantly worsening obstructive voiding symptoms.
And then I was getting up 5 or 6 times a night. You know, it kind of messes up your sleep.
And when he'd come home from work, he literally would be like charging in to go. And I'd say, geez, don't you go before you leave the office?
And I recommended a repeat biopsy. Again, the biopsy was negative for prostate cancer, but this time he had several cores which showed a precancerous condition. He's done very well after the biopsy, but his prostate is now enlarged to over 100 cubic centimeters. We clearly thought it was time to offer some additional therapy, either additional medical therapy or surgical therapy. He chose to go on the medication, and we actually get two benefits by him being on these 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. One is that it shrinks the prostate, but more importantly, there's been a very large study in the last decade which showed that taking 5-alpha reductase inhibitors may reduce the risk of developing prostate cancer by up to 25%.
The doctor wants to see me 4 times a year just to do a regular exam and take a blood test. And I take one pill a day. I haven't had any side effects. What I have seen is improvement in that I don't have any symptoms where I need to go to the restroom. So it helps with my sleep. It's working. So I'm fine now. No problems.
Dr. Andriel?
Well, I think Doug is really the perfect person to take a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor. Why do I say that? Well, he had a large prostate. I believe they measured it at 100 cc's, which is well above average. Furthermore, he had symptoms. He was getting up at night. He had urinary frequency, which was interrupting the course of his day-to-day life. Secondly, I think he's a great candidate because he's at high risk to have prostate cancer or to get prostate cancer. Apparently, one of his biopsies showed some histological things that were worrisome for that. And for me, the 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, in addition to shrinking his prostate, treating his symptoms, are likely to reduce his risk of being diagnosed with prostate cancer. And the third good thing is that these drugs, I think, improve the ability of PSA to find that prostate cancer if, in fact, he's going to develop it. So I think for Doug, he's the perfect person to take a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor.
I'd actually agree, but I think the real reason is his symptomatic disease. In other words, he's got a large prostate, he's suffering from symptoms that haven't been under good control, and this is a good drug for that purpose, not only to try to reduce his symptoms, but to prevent him progressing from needing surgery to relieve his symptoms in the future or have an episode of acute retention where he can't urinate at all. I think the decision to take it to knock back his probability of being diagnosed with prostate cancer a little bit, I think, is secondary, and I would hope in making the decision, he knows that we really don't know whether we'd reduce his chance of dying of prostate cancer. And as the AUA ASCO guideline says, we can't be certain we might not induce a high-grade prostate cancer.
Yeah, you know, we've got more data on the 5-alpha reductase inhibitors for prevention of prostate cancer than any other drug or any other intervention. People out there have talked about dietary interventions to prevent prostate cancer, eating tofu. Quite honestly, what are the other drugs that people talk about? There's aspirin. We do have one study that suggests in a cohort study that aspirin might be beneficial. There are some cohort studies that suggest that the statins can be beneficial. And there's one interventional trial with teremafin, which is used in women to treat osteoporosis, that says that it might be beneficial in prevention of prostate cancer. I would warn people that these things are suggestions, because I can remember when we thought vitamin E and selenium prevented prostate cancer because there were studies that suggested it. Then we actually did the true interventional trial and found out not only did they not prevent prostate cancer, with vitamin E there was a slight, statistically not significant, but slight increased risk of getting prostate cancer, and with selenium there was a slight increased risk of diabetes.
I'd certainly agree, and boy, we need a lot more study in this area, not just with 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, but with many of the other agents.
Meanwhile, we hear a lot about how diet affects our health. Is there a role for dietary changes in prostate cancer prevention?
Well, what I'd say is there's some suggestive evidence that prostate cancer is one of those cancers where a high-fat diet, and particularly a diet with lots of red meat, may be related to prostate cancer and related to have more aggressive forms of prostate cancer. That's also true for being obese. But I think when you ask that question, I would urge, particularly as a primary care doctor who's responsible not only for the 3% of deaths from prostate cancer in men, but the 97% deaths from all other things, to be thinking broadly about a healthy diet, and certainly a low-fat diet with less red meat, plenty of exercise, keeping your weight under control are good things for your health generally. And I think that's the key question more than what it does for any particular disease or cancer.
Hopefully we'll have more information in the future to help us deal with this issue, and we've covered a lot today. Just before we end our discussion, though, gentlemen, if you would just give us a brief summation of what you think are the key points we've covered.
I think it's important that people realize that prostate cancer screening is not a simple thing. It's just not simply a test. I really do believe that men should be informed of the potential risks and the potential benefits and be encouraged to make a choice. Also, when I say it's not simply just a test, people need to realize that we don't really know what the cutoff should be, what a normal test is, and what an abnormal test is these days.
Yeah, I agree with Otis. There's a lot of controversy about whether PSA is a good screening test for prostate cancer and exactly how to use PSA if it is, in fact, a good test. But the one thing I would say is that outside of screening, we need to continue to measure PSA levels in men who have prostate difficulties, because there really is no better tool that we have that gives me an idea of the size of a man's prostate, his future risk of having complications related to BPH, and even of later on developing prostate cancer than PSA. So we've been talking a lot about PSA's limitations perhaps as a screening test. Let's not throw away or lose sight of its advantages as a tool to inform the doctor about a man's prostate.
And I do worry, getting back to screening, that given the results of the large randomized trials that are out now, that maybe we've put too many eggs in the screening basket for prostate cancer prevention. I really think we need more research on prevention, which lowers the risk of both getting prostate cancer and has the potential for lowering the risk of dying of it. I also want to urge men, when they think about their overall health, to think broadly. Again, prostate cancer is an important health problem, but men have a 3% chance of dying of prostate cancer and a 97% chance of dying of something else. If we worry too much about the 3%, one of those things that causes the 97% might sneak up on us. So we need to think broadly about a healthy lifestyle and taking good care of ourselves overall.
Well, thank you all for participating in this really important discussion today, and we'd like to thank you, our viewers, and hope that today's program will help you better understand how to talk about prostate cancer screening with your patients and give you the information you need to discuss prevention. Also, we encourage each of you to go to your computer, log on to discoveryhealthcme.com, and take the post-test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free credit for this program. And if you'd like to see the program again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. The graphics and the references from the program are also available online. Finally, we'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting this program, and we'd like to thank GlaxoSmithKline for the educational grant that made this program possible. I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health CME. Have a nice day.